Who is the biggest provider of oil to the United States? It's Canada. And the tar sands in Canada's province of Alberta are the worst source of energy on the planet. Let me know that I've done wrong when I've known this all along. I go around a time or two just to waste my time with you. Tell me all that you've thrown away. Find out games you don't want to play. You are the only one that needs to know. I'll keep you my dirty little secret. Hundreds of billions of dollars, the world's largest capital project, have built an industrial nightmare hidden in the Canadian North. The Earth's surface, up to 75 feet deep, is stripped away to expose a gooey mix of sand and oil. Just getting the oil out uses up most of Canada's new northern natural gas, a much cleaner fuel wasted for dirty oil. It takes still more chemicals and energy to get the oil oozing down pipelines to American refineries where more greenhouse gases are released. It takes at least one barrel of oil burned to make three, the most wasteful energy process on Earth. The U.S. group Environmental Defense launched a report February 2008 titled, Canada's Toxic Tar Sands, the Most Destructive Project on Earth. A whole range of activists, from Greenpeace to the Council of Canadians, is fighting to stop massive expansion of the tar sands. The major oil companies want to strip away the surface of the Earth in a patch the size of Florida. Can you believe that? They dump their toxic waste into giant man-made lakes, dangerously close to the mighty Athabasca River, and by that river to the sensitive Arctic. All told, the tar sands projects, led by the world's largest oil companies, create an octopus of toxic waste and global climate change. No one is exempt. I'm Alex Smith. In today's Radio EcoShock, you will hear three voices of sanity. Campaigners Jesse Tallman and Will Horter will explain the damage and threats to the Pacific coast. Even the Great Bear Rainforest is threatened by pipelines and tankers. But you will feel it most when you hear Mike Mercurdy, one of the Aboriginal victims of this industrial genocide in the North. The real price of oil in lives and futures lost. Tar Sands, The Dark Side of the Boom, recorded November 25, 2008 at the Heritage Hall in Vancouver. Our first speaker is Jesse Kalman, the Tar Sands campaigner with the Polaris Institute, on the social and environmental impacts of the tar sands.
Wow. Okay, I'd like to introduce the three panelists that we have here tonight. The first speaker will be Jesse Kalman, who's a tar sands campaigner with the Polaris Institute, and will be speaking about the social and environmental impacts of the tar sands, including links to the military and water depletion. The second speaker will be Mike Mercredi, member of the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation, who will be speaking about the frontline struggles of the Indigenous community in Fort Chipewyan against the tar sands industry. Our third speaker will be Will Horter, who's the Executive Director of Dogwood Initiative, and will speak about the little-known support that infrastructure-based and proposed in BC provides to current and future tar sands development. So, Jesse?
So as mentioned, I'm Jesse Kalman. I work for the Polaris Institute. So I live in Ottawa and I work for the Polaris Institute. I'm originally from Calgary. I've only been in Ottawa for the past 6 years. And I've been working now for the Polaris Institute for the past two on this issue. It's something that I feel very strongly about. It's something that is very painful for me to talk about sometimes because of just how devastating it is. My first visit to the tar sands was about a year and a half ago. It's the first time I saw it up close, up personal. And we got a chance to fly over the tar sands. and flying over the tar sands, you saw the photos there, and you saw how big it is, but to really understand it, to fly over it, when you're 2 kilometers above it, and you look down, and you see this massive expanse, and you look down, and you see a black dot, and you wonder, what's that black dot? And you look a little closer, and you realize that that's the biggest truck in the world, is that little black dot below you. So that's how big we're looking at. In addition to that, this past year, I got a chance to fly a lot closer and down, and really see it up close and personal. And our pilot got really excited, and he actually dipped into one of the pits, and they set off flares to try and get us out of there. We were that close. And we got encompassed by the smell of this, the sickness that is coming off of these tar ponds. And for almost 48 hours, I had such bad vertigo and nausea that I couldn't walk in a straight line. That's just from breathing it in for a few minutes. That's how toxic this is. That's the size and the disaster that we're looking at, and that's what we're facing. As mentioned on the video, the tar sands is becoming increasingly one of the highest emitters of greenhouse gas emissions in Canada. As long as we have the tar sands, we won't be able to meet Kyoto. We won't be able to reduce our climate change impacts in any way whatsoever because of them. Harper is actually protecting the tar sands, and if you read some of his policies, particularly the Turning the Corner plan, protect the tar sands and the industry from having to reduce their emissions while cutting emissions in other industries and making them pick up the slack. In addition to that, obviously we've seen the effects in terms of contamination on the water systems, but there's also huge amounts of water depletion. As mentioned on the video, it takes between 3 and 5 barrels of water to make a barrel of tar sands oil, which is even higher if it's the SAGD, which is the steam-assisted gravity drainage process. What we saw in there is the mining process. That water ends up purely in tailings ponds. It, at this point in time, there's no way to clean that water. It just sits there, and the ponds get bigger and bigger and bigger. One of the biggest man-made lakes in the world is one of the tailings ponds. It's only the only bigger thing than that is the Three Gorges Dam when it's finished. And these things sit right near the river. Some of those photos show you just how close they are to the river. If they breach that whole river system all the way through the Mackenzie Valley and the Mackenzie Valley watershed is completely destroyed. In terms of the water depletion, we're looking at a river system that can't keep up with what's going on there. The fish are dying from contamination, but will increasingly be dying from the lack of water and oxygen in the water, particularly in the winter during low flow. And now the Athabasca Glacier is melting, in part because of climate change, which the tar sands is partly responsible for. The water will eventually dry up. There will be no source water for the river, and it'll be left in that place when the companies decide to vacate. In terms of the social effects of the tar sands, Fort McMurray, which is the area where the tar sands are based, most of them anyways, is growing at such an alarming rate that the education system, the healthcare, housing can't keep up with the boom. There's huge social dislocation, people coming from the East Coast, people coming from Ontario looking for high-paying jobs. Often it's young males. The level of drug use, the level of prostitution in the region, the level of gambling is through the roof. Crime. I think it's something like $1,000 for a crappy little one-bedroom apartment in Fort McMurray. And we're talking about a small town. We're not talking about, a major city. In Alberta as well, homelessness and low-income issues in across the province have increased because of the huge amounts in rent increases, huge amounts in living cost increases caused by the boom. Now we're looking at economic downturn. People are losing their jobs, but the cost of living isn't going down as quickly. So homelessness is increasing even more. What we're seeing is that during a boom, we get homelessness, and during a bust, we get homelessness. The only people who benefit from the boom are the upper class, and the only people who can survive a bust without being severely hurt are the upper class. A lot of folks have said to me, well, it's really great that we see this economic downturn. The price of oil is going down so low that the tar sands aren't profitable anymore. And I say, yeah, for a short period of time. But in the meantime, all of those leases for the small little companies are being bought up by the big companies, by the ExxonMobils, by the Shells, by the Totals. So when all of those small little companies that are easier to fight leave the area, we'll be left with the giants. And they have a lot more sway and a lot more funds, and they can survive the downturn. In addition, as we've seen, there's a lot of manufacturing sectors, particularly in the east side of the country, that are suffering, but also in British Columbia, from the downturn. And a big part of the reason was because of the huge economic shift that occurred in Canada, focusing on Alberta. Alberta became the centerpiece of the new Harper government's economy. And in the meantime, he allowed other areas and other sectors to slowly waste away. Now with a downturn, they can't survive. So the only place in Canada that's really, really going to survive the economy in the long run without being scathed in some way is the tar sands. In Canada, we don't have an energy policy. There's no energy policy to ensure our long-term security needs. There's no pipelines even that move from west to east. So if say, the supplies get cut off in any way, the east side of the country is left in the dark. We've been proposing at Polaris, and many people have been calling for a green shift and just transition, shifting away from the tar sands, from the dirty industry, and shifting to more comprehensive integrated energy policy that not only deals with the communities downstream and the effects that they have to deal with, but also the workers, and shifting their skills towards hydropower, to small hydropower, not big hydropower. I'll make a distinction there. Geothermal, wind, and solar. We also want to see laws put into place, or in some cases deregulated, to allow for environmental innovation. What I mean by that is there's cases, a lot of them in the East that I've been dealing with, where people try and build solar or build wind on their land, and they may be in the country because you can't build it in many cities, and they try and sell back to the grid. Only the problem is that energy companies will require them to build the line to their house, pay $30,000, $40,000 to build the line. Then in order to sell back to the grid, they'll charge the person and say, you know what? Actually, we want to own that line, so we'll buy it from you for a dollar, and then you can sell your energy. That kind of legal, you know, bullshit basically prevents environmental innovation, and it prevents individuals from taking action on a personal level to stop this corporate domination of our energy systems. In addition to that, of course, we see that the oil companies, they receive tons of tax breaks. They have huge subsidies to keep themselves going. The energy industry in our country is one of the most highly subsidized industries in the world. So our environmental innovation can't compete. You know, other countries are supporting their environmental innovation. Instead, in Canada, we're trying to shut it down and keep it down. The last thing I want to cover just briefly is the military links between the tar sands and the military. The one major one is the Baghdad Berms Calgary Booms theory. I don't know if you all have heard this, but basically the reason that Calgary boomed and the tar sands boomed when it did was because of the Iraq war. Now, whether that was planned or not, stable oil supplies from the Middle East were cut off, and Alberta became the unclean source of energy for the American security and energy. In addition to that, the Pentagon and the military in the States consumes 85% of the total U.S. government's energy. That's 500,000 barrels of oil a day. And that energy is now going to be increasingly coming from the tar sands. Many have said that there's laws in the States that are there to prevent that from happening, but in reality, what those laws say is that the mixed oil is okay for consumption by U.S. government. So that mixed oil could be 50% bitumen or dirty oil and 50% conventional oil, and they can still consume it. As long as it's not 100% bitumen, they can consume it. So those laws are basically just there to make it look like they're making clean energy decisions. And they're now looking to up their shale in the States as well, which will just contribute to the dirty energy, and they're using technology from the tar sands. So we're hoping to illuminate all of these issues to people across the country. That's why we're going around doing this, with the hope that people will stand up and say, this is not okay, we don't want this, and we want these corporations, and we want this government out of here. So thanks, guys.
You've just listened to Jesse Kalman, the first of three speakers on The Tar Sands, The Dark Side of the Boom, recorded November 25, 2008, at the Heritage Hall in Vancouver by Alex Smith of Radio Eco Shock. Sponsors for the event included the Council of Canadians, QPBC, Greenpeace, Tar Sands Free BC, the Sierra Club, the Dogwood Initiative, the Institute for Citizen Journalism, Check Your Head, North Coast EnviroWatch, Western Wilderness Committee, and the Polaris Institute. You can download all three speakers from the Alternative Energy page at ecoshock.org. The second speaker of the evening was Mike Mercury, a member of the Athabasca, Chipewyan First Nation, speaking about the frontline struggles of the Indigenous community in Fort Chipewyan against the tar sands industry, including a plague of tar sands-related cancer.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming out. I thank for our supporters for having this and other people coming to do so. My name is Mike Mercury. I'm a member of the community of Fort Chip. And Fort Chip is what we're calling the ground zero. It's a sacrifice zone. A sacrifice zone for this oil to be produced. And from it, extracts poison. Poison into the water, into the air, the land, the trees. Now the people. Now the people are dying. I buried my auntie just this year. I buried my uncle a couple years back. I got an auntie right now living with cancer. There's no known cancers in our family. Cancer doesn't exist in our family. Just in the last 15 years, all of a sudden cancer's popping up. But this is just not just my family. Although this is directly affected to me, which brings me here. And it's unfortunate that I have to be here. And I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here coming here to tell you that my people are dying. I shouldn't be here coming to tell you that I'm facing genocide. That your own countrymen are dying from this resource, this dark resource, this tar sands, this oil sands. It's a dark resource. It sits under our feet, and you want to come and extract it from under our feet. And it was time that was said that was a factor that grew this dark resource into a need. And this need has succumbed to the greed, man, money. It happens. They say this is how things go, and this is the economy. And it's a way of living. But just to let you know that way of living is a way for our people's way of dying. Having to bury your own for a resource so other people can make money is plain right out murder. Right out, I'm going to say it's murder. It's genocide. This is something that I got to come and tell you guys that why would a community first known in Alberta as being the oldest settlement in Alberta, which is what it was coined for in 1988 at its bicentennial. The next thing it's going to be known for is all the dead people in it, all the people that we're going to be burying. Just in January of this year, we buried one of our young guys. He was 28 years old, and he succumbed to this cancer. The cancers they're finding there can only be found in 1 in 100,000 people. There's only 1,200 people in my community. So far this year, 6 cases of this cancer. So when you're faced with death, when you're faced with possibly being killed off, the best thing you can do is spread a message and tell everyone else that we're facing this. I gotta come tell you that my people are facing death. This community is gonna be a dead zone. The water can't drink it no more. The animals, they can no longer consume them. The air, basically we're not gonna be able to breathe. And this, they're taking away, they're stripping from us our livelihood, our sustainability. That's infringement on our treaty rights. We have a right to health. We have a right to a healthy environment. And where are these rights going? And this is something that this country supports. This country supports that. Killing off its own countrymen. Killing off its own people. Its first people. A country should be proud of the first people. Because as of you all born of this country, call yourselves natives to this country. You're now native to Canada. Well, so am I. That doesn't make me no different than you. That I have to come here and tell you guys that we're burying each other. When I was a kid, it'd be maybe once a year, it'd be a death. And a person died from old age or something natural. Not 20 people a year. Not people younger than me. Not people who'll never grow old. Not people who will never get to see their children or their grandchildren grow. That should not be. Not in a country as diverse as Canada. When someone is faced with these kind of things, they'll do and say whatever they can. And all I can say is that this is an epidemic. This is something that, if we can't do something about this, then what good are we? What good is our country? What good is our voting system? What good is our democracy? We as people have choices. We have choices to make vote and vote our governments in. And yet, the same government is turning around and killing off its own people. Sacrificing them. For what? The good of the nation? The good of the planet? They keep doing this, and now with the event of global warming, now you're all affected. Now you're all going to be facing this. If that river was flowing south and it hit the city of Edmonton, the capital city of Alberta, it would be an epidemic. They'd be quarantined. They'll be seeing what is going on, what is killing our people. Now, why isn't they doing this for Fort Chip? Why do I got to come here and say these things? Come here to inform you. I shouldn't have to, but I am. It's unfortunately that I am here. And I appreciate the fact that the people are bringing me here to do so. Hopefully, that the people who are listening to this, an earshot of this, will understand and have some compassion for your own fellow human beings. Because it's not just Fort Chip that's going to face this. Pretty soon, all of you will be facing this. And if Fort Chip has to be the point where the stone hits the pond and it ripples out into the rest of the country, and hopefully that ripple will ripple into your hearts and you guys will say, hey, what's going on here? Why are we allowing this? Why are we allowing our own people to die? Because I'm no different than you. We may be of different colored skin, but under the skin, we all bleed red. Water is to the earth as blood is to us. Humans need blood to live. We all need these things. And if we're allowing our own selves to die, that means you're allowing your own selves to die. You're stripping your children's futures away by allowing this to happen. Your own children. We're buying and selling what we can now. They're not going to have that choice. They're not going to be allowed to have the luxuries we have now. There's an amount of time before that oil runs out. There's an amount of time before the water is gone. There's an amount of time before there's no more food on the table to eat. With global warming coming in and possible dredges, we'd be facing extinction. All humans. We're only so many plants away from our own extinction. Can't eat the animals anymore. They say when the animals start feeling the effects, we should wake up. We should wake up because the animals can't speak for themselves. If they could, they'd be crying. Fort Chip in the area is rich with the wildlife at one time. It was a good fur-bearing place. The muskrat was abundant there. The muskrat is a water animal. It lives and breathes in the water. There's no more muskrats there. Some of them had died off. Some of them who are still lived and can went to another area. They could be found up there, but they won't be found anywhere near that area where that water flows out of the tar sands. And now that if this animal, an animal this big, that wide, can get it and go, pack up and leave and say, I don't want to be living around here because I need to sustain my own existence. Why can't we? When will we? Before it's too late? When it's knocking on your door saying, hey, guess what? If you don't turn up that heat or drive your car, you're going to die. I'm coming to get you. So think about these things when you leave here tonight, that this is what we face. It comes down to the individual choice of what we can do to sustain our own countrymen, our own people, because we're no different. We may be labeled as different, but I don't see it different. You close the lights off, we're all breathing the same air. You put a knife through to us and cut, we're all going to bleed red. So you got to think about these things. And this is what we're facing. A slow industrial genocide. There's no other way I can put it. Straight up murder. And as a human, I'll do what I can to survive. And if coming here, speaking, and hopefully influencing, and changing some of your minds just a little bit, just that little bit of thought, to change that thought, would make a difference. It'll make a difference when you tell someone who wasn't here what I heard, what you heard tonight, what's going on. This is happening. They're not going to... They're sugarcoating it into something that we think it's not. But to tell you, it's BS. Everything they say about it being, they're reclaiming the land? No, they're not. The water is okay? No, it ain't. Is the air all right? I don't think so. Because if these things that we're consuming and living with is killing us, and you're telling us that it's okay, you might as well come give me, put a gun to my head. A quick death would be a hell of a lot more easier than a slow, hard, painful death and a thing like cancer. So think about these things. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
That was Mike Mercury of the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation speaking about the plague of cancers and other problems that have hit Fort Chipewyan since the installation of the tar sands. Sponsors for the event included the Council of Canadians, QPBC, Greenpeace, Tar Sands Free BC, the Sierra Club, the Dogwood Initiative, the Institute for Citizen Journalism, Check Your Head, North Coast EnviroWatch, Western Wilderness Committee, and the Polaris Institute. You can download all three speakers from the Alternative Energy page at ecoshock.org. Broadcast on 16 stations in Canada and the United States. Going out over the world by satellite and cable, podcast and downloads, you've got Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Get tons of free MP3 downloads from our site at ecoshock.org. ECO, shock like an electric shock. It's radioactive.
The first angry rays of the sun pierced the lacy tops of Atlantic combers and touched thousands of sleeping Americans with unconscious fear.
America is addicted to oil.
Can we bring the troops home from Iraq? Can we fight off climate change? Surely we can find better sources of energy than wringing out the tarry soils of Canada. Now President Bush, in his dying days in office, has made regulations paving the way to treat the Rocky Mountains the same way. They call it oil shale, but it's oil madness. Big corporations want to mine out whole mountainsides, boil it up, and draw out the last drops of oil. They will leave devastated nature for their children. If Americans hope to stop this oil demon, they need to look north to Canada and watch closely. You can get online films about the tar sands on YouTube.com. Just look for tar sands at YouTube.com. Check out Greenpeace.ca and find great reports at Pembina.org. That's Pembina, P-E-M-B-I-N-A.org. Educate yourself, please, and then spread it to everyone you know. The American government says it won't burn tar sands oil, but as we just heard from Jesse Kalman, it's a fraud, greenwashing. In reality, the policy allows so-called mixed oils, so refineries can toss in a bit from other sources and call it tar sands free. Don't buy it. Every state and municipal government that cares about their climate and real green energy should be passing laws and bylaws and bypassing anything to do with the tar sands oil. Canadian banks are financing this nightmare. Everyone should pressure their bank to get out. Remove your funds to a credit union. Americans can call up Canadian-owned banks and branches like TD Ameritrade to protest funding the tar sands. And please, demand an end to obscene oil when the new Obama regime comes in. Mother Earth is being raped for short-sighted gains. We all know that. But the tar sands is the most vicious assault going on anywhere. Even the Stalinist toxic factories couldn't equal the tar sands wreckage. Canada will never reach greenhouse emissions cuts unless the whole population gives up oil, because the tar sands create so much pollution. That is one big reason why Canada lost its leadership position internationally when it comes to climate change. The big dirty secret is that Canada is hooked on oil and will do anything, anything to get it. When Radio EcoShock returns, we'll hear how vast new pipelines will chop up the Rocky Mountains wilderness, how dangerous tankers will sail right into the hard-fought Great Bear Rainforest, how thousands of salmon streams and major rivers will be wrecked. The whole coast of British Columbia, north to south, is being set up for the next Exxon Valdez spill, and as we'll hear next, the oil always spills. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Our theme music today is Dirty Little Secret with the All-American Rejects. We'll be right back in 30 seconds with more on the Dirty Tar Sands.
Dirty little secret, who has to know?
What is the role played by the British Columbia government in the ugly tar sands development in Alberta? And how will BC itself suffer if the extra tankers for all these new pipelines are brought along our very beautiful coastlines? This is the executive director of the Dogwood Initiative, Will Horder, speaking on November 25th at 2008 at the Heritage Hall, Vancouver. The event was titled The Tar Sands, The Dark Side of the Boom. It's part of a speaking tour through Alberta and British Columbia.
Before I get into the ins and outs of the tar sands related pipelines and tankers that threaten British Columbia, I want to talk to you a little bit about hope. Hope for the beautiful places and wildlife that you'll see in the pictures that we're showing here. Hope for the animals and the critters that live along BC's magnificent coast. And hope has become a very important thing to me lately. 1 year ago, just a little bit more than a year ago, my wife and I became parents for the first time. We know our daughter is a burgeoning activist because she took control of the agenda and decided to thrust herself into the world 15 weeks prematurely. She weighed a little bit more than a pound. And my life changed in an instant. As a new father, I was humbled by my daughter's efforts first to breathe, then to keep her heart beating, and then to eat, and then to grow. But the moment that she was born, I realized that my role both as a parent and an activist had merged. That successful parenting and activism is about controlling one's own personal fears, stepping into the unknown, and helping people bring forward the best about themselves. Experiencing our daughter's life and death struggle over the past year has reinforced for me the power of hope. Hope has become so important to me and my wife that we named our daughter Asha Hope. Asha means hope in Hindi and life in Swahili. So we thought that both Asha Hope, Hope Hope, and the world needed a double dose of hope and a little bit of life thrown in. So participating in Asha's trial of life has made me think about how you choose life when confronting massive change. And I want to share some of those thoughts with you tonight. Asha's generation was born at a historic time, as we all know if you read the papers. We're at a tipping point where civilization as we know it is beginning to go through tectonic shifts. The consumer-driven growth economy is collapsing every day. The scientists are saying that our addiction to fossil fuels threatens not only our future, but the future of the bears and the salmon and the orcas. The forces allied for business as usual are strong. And like the mythical David, we have to become formidable to slay the Goliath. And that scene can seem to many of us, and it does to me occasionally, very scary and overwhelming. But I believe that there is a path forward, and I think that path can be found in the ideas of hope and resilience. As a parent, I have hope that my daughter can grow up in a world that uses global warming to transition itself to a truly just, equitable, and sustainable world. With some hard work and some good choices, I believe that we can make this happen. Now, we ended on a picture here, after you see that, of a picture of the Great Bear Rainforest. How many of you have heard about that? How many have heard of the Great Bear Rainforest? Well, a lot of people have been investing a lot of hope over a lot of years to create the protected areas and the management regime that's supposed to apply in the Great Bear Rainforest. Unfortunately, these areas in the north are where the pipelines from Alberta end and the tankers will go into. So it's the waters and the shores and the coastlines of the Great Bear Rainforest where the oil tankers are going to transit. And they're under threat. The tar sands are putting this magnificent, globally significant ecosystem at risk. This is where 25% of the world's remaining coastal temperate rainforest exists. The first project, when we start looking at the infrastructure projects that are proposed to support the tar sands in BC, the first one I'd like to mention is Enbridge's Gateway Project. My laser is somewhere here. And you'll see this line right here. It comes from Edmonton out to Kitimat on the coast. It involves a twin pipeline of approximately 1,200 kilometers long. It will go from Edmonton to Kitimat. The pipeline will cross thousands and thousands of streams, many of them salmon-bearing. One of the pipes will be exporting somewhere between 525,000 and a million barrels of oil a day to China or India. The second pipeline will be used to import a toxic mix of petrochemicals that's called condensate, which is used to dilute tar-like bitumen so that you can pump it through pipes and so you can refine it more easily. Bitumen is like tar, and so it doesn't move through pipelines very easily. This project by itself would bring potentially 150 oil tankers a year into the Great Bear Rainforest. The second project is Kinder Morgan's project, and that's actually an expansion of what they call their Trans Mountain Pipeline. And that, you'll see, is this piece right here that comes down into Vancouver. This is an existing pipeline that the company's proposing to expand in four phases. The pipeline, this is the pipeline some of you, most of you living in Vancouver, will be very familiar with, especially the folks from Burnaby, because this is the one that burst and spilled about 2,000 barrels of oil in about 25 minutes. The existing pipeline has about 30 tankers a year that service it that come into the area, Briard Inlet. And if this goes forward to all stages, they'll basically double the number of tankers. The next project is Kinder Morgan's as well, and it's the fourth stage of this expansion of the Trans Mountain, and it would actually connect from the existing pipeline here to Kitimat, and it would follow a very similar route to the Enbridge project that I just showed you. This will also export oil to China and India. The last two projects that are important to know about are, one is a proposed Pembina pipeline. You can see it right here. It's this little thing here. It's a new pipeline that would go from Kitimat and it would connect to an existing pipeline just north of Prince George where they would reverse and they would basically ship condensate back to Alberta. The second project isn't on here on the map because it's already actually active and tankers are using this right now. It is a project by Methanex and Encana, which is importing condensate into Kitimat. And then they're loading it onto railroad cars that they go right along the Skeena River all the way to Alberta. And the Skeena River, for those of you who know, is one of, if not BC's most important salmon river, either after the Fraser or in front of the Fraser, depending on where you live and what the statistics say for the course of the year. So when you're talking about these various pipelines, you need to understand that they basically have impacts, two different kinds of impacts. One will be from the pipeline itself, or all these proposed pipelines themselves, and the other one is from the tankers and the impacts of the tankers. So we're going to go through these. I'm not going to talk a lot about the pipeline impacts, but obviously when you cut a big whack 1,200 kilometers along over mountains, through dales, through streams, etc., you create a lot of damage. They're actually now talking about burying the pipeline. So there's some pictures later on of what that looks like, but it actually causes significant impact about itself. They need roads that go along this pipeline, all the entire route, because they have to maintain it. And then, of course, there's the risks of spills and ruptures. The second kind of impacts is from the tankers themselves, and I'm going to spend a fair bit of time talking about this. And it's both from just the increased amount of traffic, but also from the various different kinds of spills that occur. What should be aware is every time a tanker connects up to actually load or unload, there is a spill. It's just a question. They don't call it a spill because it's just, you know, a certain number of volumes go into the water at that point. But every time they connect, and it would be two or three times a week for most of these projects, there's a small spill. So here's the route of the proposed routes of the tankers that would go to Kitimat. There's the northern route and the southern route. The northern route would bring tankers through Heckett Strait, here, Dixon Entrance, Heckett Strait here, and then it would go up through Douglas Channel. The southern route down here would come in through Queen Charlotte Sound, over the top of Vancouver Island, Queen Charlotte Sound, Heckett Strait, and then connect into Douglas Channel as well. In doing this, they would basically pass, along the tankers would pass 650 salmon spawning streams, the feeding grounds of the gray and the humpback whales, the migratory route of gray whales. And in this area, this whole area in here, there's 20 federally listed at-risk species that would potentially be impacted. So tankers out of Kitimat, well, what's that look like? Well, these waters are treacherous. A lot of the pictures you'll see, it's when they're calm because it's when you can get in there. This is the fourth most hazardous sea area in the world, according to the West Coast Marine Weather Hazard Manual of Environment Canada. And it's that way. It's so dangerous because it has very short, steep waves that develop quickly over its very shallow waters. It's a combination of deep and shallow waters. So in the winter, sometimes the seas are 8 to 10 meters high. That's common. There's gale force winds that come out of these incised fjords and channels through Kitimat, causing significant rough water and freezing spray. And in the summer, northwesterly winds can routinely travel up to 35 knots. Most of the area, and if you've ever tried to fly into the area, it's poor visibility because of rain, fog, and snow, routinely throughout the year. And we found in a book that said, it was published in the mid-90s, that said the second highest wave ever recorded was in Heckett Strait on a former oil drilling testing facility that they put in place in the 70s. It was over 90 feet high. So given this weather and given the kinds of ships, you're talking about very large crude carriers, VLCCs, which are Exxon Valdez-like carriers. The question of oil spills, it's not a question of when. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. If the Gateway project went forward, there's an SFU study that said, based on industrial averages, a moderate spill of 1,000 barrels would occur one to every 3 years, and a major spill of over 10,000 barrels would occur every 6 to 7 years. And that's just if the Enbridge project went through at its higher volumes. But despite all precautions, and the reason we say it's when, not if, is because despite all precautions, accidents happen. This here picture is of a barge that overturned in Robson Bight. Have you been following that in the news over the last year or so? Any of you? Raise your hand if you've heard about this. Yeah, it was a barge carrying some diesel oil. It overturned in August of 2007 in the environmentally sensitive area of Robson Bight, which is an ecological reserve, and there's big questions about why the barge was in there in the first place. And that's on the northeast coast of Vancouver Island. It spilled about 85 barrels of diesel oil. 85 barrels. So remember those statistics before that I said? 1,000 barrels every 3 years, 10,000 barrels every 6 to 7 years. This spill was 85 barrels. It took them forever to clean up, and it's still not clean up. It spilled into important orca habitat, and orcas have been exposed to this diesel for long periods of time, and it's going to be interesting to see what kind of health effects that will have. There's currently a dispute going on that's been going on since the spill, whose jurisdiction this was and who's responsible for cleaning it up between the provincial government and various different branches of the federal government. So this still has not been resolved. Now, the second example that I'm going to show you here is one you may be familiar with. Where do you think this is? Burnaby. Yep, that's right. So this is the Burnaby spill. It was on the Kinder Morgan pipeline, which I discussed before. It spilled less than 2,000 barrels of oil in 25 minutes. And a lot of it went into Burrard Inlet through the storm drains. Now, what's interesting about this is Burrard Inlet and the lower mainland in these areas, that's where all the cleanup equipment is. There's none up on the north coast. It's all down here. And they still couldn't clean it up, even though it happened almost right next to the cleanup equipment. So that puts it in perspective. The third example is the Queen of the North. Now, the Queen of the North is a ferry that was actually built for these small in size channels in the inside passage, so it's small and maneuverable. It actually sunk right along the tanker route, just adjacent, right around the corner from Hartley Bay and Douglas Channel. It had less than 2,000 barrels of diesel on it, which has been leaching out at various different rates since. Depends on who you listen to, whether you listen to the government or you listen to the local First Nations about whether it's still leaking. They have not cleaned that up yet. There's a dispute about that and some lawsuits. The heroes of Hartley Bay, the First Nations there, are still fighting to clean it up. And when we met with the elders up in that area, we went up and there was a potlatch with some friends of mine went, and when we went up there, we said, well, what can we do to help you? And they say, stop the oil tankers from coming to our waters. The last example is the Exxon Valdez. That's a picture there. And we're still seeing the devastating impacts of this. And I don't know if this is going to work or not, so we'll see. I actually have a clip of sound here, but it's not working. And we had a clip of sound from one of the women who was in charge of the cleanup and was one of the first people on site, and what she felt when she landed there with her hazmat suit, and how she just started bawling because she knew, despite the training and despite having more resources, the best resourced cleanup facilities in the world, there was nothing that they could really do. She says it much more eloquently than I do. But the effects of the Exxon Valdez, as I said, are still being felt. 250,000 birds were estimated to have been killed, along with an estimated 22 killer whales, 2,800 sea otters, 1.9 million salmon, and 12.9 billion herring, which is the basis of that whole ecosystem. Now, some of people think that Exxon Valdez is the worst oil spill in history. Well, in fact, it's not. It's the 35th largest oil spill, and since the Exxon Valdez spilled, there's been many larger than that have occurred throughout the world. So when people start talking to you about, oh, don't worry, that was the old days, now we have double-hulled tankers, the regulations in Canada do not require double-hulled tankers to flow in Canadian waters until 2020. So don't believe that. So what are the impacts in BC of oil spills potentially? Well, the impacts would be devastating. Don't just read the list for yourself, but basically thousands and thousands and thousands of existing jobs would be put at risk. 16,000 commercial fishing jobs, sports fishing jobs, tourism jobs. There's 500,000 to 800,000 cruise ship passengers go through those waters where the tankers go on an annual basis. All that would be put at risk. Many, many parks, the Great Bear Rainforest, the Gowanus World Heritage Site, basically the coastal icon, the things that define British Columbia would actually be put at risk. So now some of you may be wondering, isn't there an existing moratorium on oil tankers in these waters already? Well, the answer is yes, there is. And the government of Canada imposed a moratorium on oil tankers on the North Coast 35 years ago, in 1972. And the terms of reference, this has been confirmed over the years, and in recent documents, the terms of reference of two federal panels basically explicitly say that there's a moratorium banning oil tankers in Hecate Strait, Dixon Entrance, Queen Charlotte Sound, and Douglas Channel. However, and Trudeau imposed that in 1972, and eight prime ministers basically have stood behind that moratorium. That is to say, until Stephen Harper became prime minister. Because of some strange mistake that was made in terms of documenting that existing moratorium, although there's many documents that refer to it since, the original documentation cannot be found. So the Canadian government's position now, quietly, they haven't put out an advertisement of this, but basically is that the moratorium doesn't exist. And there's been a fair bit of confusion this last federal election in certain ridings where we raised this issue about what the actual law requires. And their position is, they talk about a ban on tankers, but what they're referring to is what's called the voluntary tanker exclusion zone. So the moratorium was put in place in 1972, and all the documents that refer to the area up until the switch in government document and refer to that moratorium. Now the new government's position is that this voluntary exclusion zone that was brought into place in 1988 that only applies to tankers that go from Alaska to the United States and bans them from the Inside Passage, that's the only thing that exists. Nothing else exists. Therefore, and why is that important? Because it means that all of these tar sands-related projects can go forward. So that's the bad news. The good news is that before the last federal election, every party, Dogwood Initiative and some other groups, were able to get every party except for the Conservatives to commit to a ban on oil tanker traffic through BC's North Coast, to commit to a legislated ban, whether they're in government or whether they're in opposition. And even the Conservatives, because of the high-profile nature of this issue in certain areas where the Conservatives were vulnerable, the Conservatives actually made some commitments. So I'm going to read you what was in this very bizarre statement that was in their platform. It's called Prohibiting the Export of Raw Bitumen to Higher Polluting Jurisdictions. And they said, a re-elected Conservative government led by Stephen Harper will prevent any company from exporting raw bitumen, unprocessed oil from the tar sands, outside of Canada for upgrading in order to take advantage of lower pollution or greenhouse gas emission standards elsewhere. Now, what's interesting about that is the only thing it applies to is basically West Coast pipelines exporting to China, which means the Gateway Enbridge project and the other ones I listed. So this is an interesting change, and we're not certain actually what kind of impact it will have. A little bit more bad news before I get to the last part of the good news is that despite some good initiatives here in BC by the government around climate change, the Liberal government of BC has proposed an energy corridor. They announced it in the last throne speech that would include the area for the Enbridge pipeline. They're proposing this to get around the First Nations objections and First Nations opposition. This is a major contradiction with their climate change aspirations, because the increased emissions that would be facilitated by this from the tar sands would basically wipe out all of the emission gains from all the other initiatives that we're trying to implement in British Columbia. So they've made commitments about reducing greenhouse gases by 33% in British Columbia. Well, if they allow the tar sands pipelines, the increase of emissions out of Alberta would actually balance that out, and we'd be net zero for all the hard work we do in British Columbia. So the tar sands aren't just an Alberta problem or a national Canadian problem. They're a global problem with a local face. And if Canada wants to do its part to address global warming, the Alberta tar sands simply can't be allowed to grow by the 400 or 500% that Mr. Bush and Mr. Harper are pushing for. And the tar sands pipeline tanker projects just cannot be built. And it just can't be allowed to occur. So global warming will lead to inconceivable changes in our lifetime. And the folks up in Fort Chippewa are already seeing some of those kinds of impacts. But here locally, it's going to mean warmer local waters. And with warmer local waters, it means that the salmon are going to die. And with the salmon go the wolves, and with the wolves go the bears, and the rainforest goes, and the First Nations people along the coast, and many of us. And I simply don't want my daughter to grow up in that world. I can't even imagine what that world looks like. And I'm going to work my tail off to make sure that it doesn't happen, but I'm going to need your help. We, the people of BC, have a very special role to play in this. We can do something to stop these five tanker pipeline projects and rein in the tar sands. The leaders of our respective governments, the cabinet ministers that come throughout BC, both in the federal and provincial government, they have the power to stop these projects. But so far, they've been cheerleaders or silent supporters. That's why we need to get a legislative tanker ban. Knowing our government's addiction to fossil fuels, we know it's going to be hard. But as I've learned over this last year being a new parent, things can change very, very quickly. I have hope. I know we can make this happen. And the good news is it is actually happening right now. Some of you have signed the petition in the back. You've joined 28,000 other British Columbians who've signed that petition, mostly in the key cabinet ministers' ridings across BC. Dogwood Initiative has also been very successful over the last year or so, or the last few years, in delaying most of those projects that you've seen by monkey-wrenching their finances. We've been playing in the financial markets to try to scare the money away from them, and we're going to continue to do that. And this pressure that we're bringing to bear is working so far. All of the projects on the coast have not moved forward at their timelines, and none of them's a done deal yet. But to get a legislated ban on tankers, we're going to need to put a knockout punch in place, and that's the legislative tanker ban. We may be able to slay Goliath. He may have been able to do it by himself, but we're going to need a heck of a lot of help. So as we move forward, here's what we can do. Sign the petition. We need somebody who owns $2,000 worth of Enbridge shares to donate them to us or to work with us so that we can put a shareholder's resolution forward. We're already working with some of the SRI funds, but there's lots of people who own Enbridge shares across the country. It's been considered a safe investment. So if you know anybody, have them get in touch with us. You can continue to own them. We can just act as your agent. You can volunteer with Kelsey at the back table. Well, we have some pretty exciting things that we're going to do coming in the new year. So stopping the tar sands pipeline, we know, is not going to be easy. The pro-fossil fuel forces in BC and across Canada are strong, but over 80% of British Columbians are opposed to tankers, including that cuts across all political parties. They think it's crazy to put BC's coast at risk so that China and India and the U.S. can continue their addiction to oil. By working together, we can end this insanity. Here's what we're going to do in January. We have a Tankers Are Loony campaign. We have these stickers, which you'll see, that go on loonies, and we're going to try to get 1 million of those suckers in circulation around British Columbia and around the world. We're targeting all the cabinet ministers' ridings all the way across the country. We're looking for businesses. We're already in negotiations with a number of businesses. This is phase one. Phase two is a tar sand sticker, the same thing. The black on there signifies an oil spill. We already have a lot of people interested in this, so sign up if you want to do this. We'll send you these things. We want you to empty out your cash, your piggy banks, whatever you have loonies. We want you to stick them on there and get them in circulation to tell this government that you're not going to stand for this. So in closing, I started with thoughts of hope, and I want to end with thoughts of hope. I want to tell you a small, very quick story about a fellow by the name of Nashon. How many of you have heard of him? People who are study the Bible or the old Hebrew Bible? Nobody? Okay. Well, I heard this story recently, and I thought it was pretty interesting. Some of the commentaries of the old Hebrew Bible relate this story, and I think it has a lot that we can learn from it. Nashon was a man who was a noble person, and he was around 20 when he was with Moses, when Moses was on his exodus with the Israelites to flee the Egyptians. And after a long journey, they came to the Red Sea, and they couldn't go any further. And they were stuck there. What do we do? Big sea, can't cross it. They were stuck, and they were despairing, and they were fearing for their lives, frankly. And Moses got up and made a bunch of proclamations, but nothing happened. The night came, and the Israelites stood on the banks of the Red Sea, and they wailed in despair. And that continued until the next morning. The Red Sea was there, and they didn't know how they were going to get away. When quietly, this fellow by the name of Nashon entered the waters. He walked out into the Red Sea, and everybody thought he was nuts. They thought he was crazy. He walked in up to his thighs initially, and everybody's watching him. Then he got up to his waist, and then he got up to his shoulders, and people thought he was actually trying to commit suicide. But once he was up to his nose, magically the waters of the Red Sea parted, and they were able to escape. Now, the reason I tell you this story is because sometimes when you venture out to do something, it doesn't seem like it's going to actually have any impact. The first time we gave a Tar Sands presentation like this, my organization, there was 4 people in the audience. We've subsequently filled rooms with 800 people talking about this in various locations up and down the British Sea Coast. And what Nashon and I think my experience as a father can teach us is that a group of committed, resilient people who have hope can perform miracles. In the final analysis, it's up to us. The actions that each of you take, as Mike said, is going to determine our fate and the fate of the BC coast. And we need your help. We need you to help us, and we need to help each other. Because the children like Ashahope and your children and your grandchildren need us to become formidable. Not tomorrow, today. And I know from personal experience that if you take a little bit of hope, add a little bit of life, mix in some hard work, miracles can happen. So our time is now. Let's get to it. Thank you very much.
I'm Alex Smith, and you've just been listening to Will Horter, the Executive Director of Dogwood Initiative, speaking about the little-known support that the infrastructure-based and proposed pipelines in BC provide to the current and future tar sands development. It was on November 25, 2008, at Heritage Hall, Vancouver. The event was titled The Tar Sands, The Dark Side of the Boom. It was part of a speaking tour going through Alberta and British Columbia. The sponsors included the Council of Canadians, the Vancouver Burnaby Chapter, QPBC, Greenpeace, Tar Sands Free BC, the Sierra Club, the Dogwood Initiative, the Institute for Citizen Journalism, Check Your Head, North Coast EnviroWatch, Western Wilderness Committee, and the Polaris Institute. You can get the rest of the evening as recorded by Radio EcoShock at our website at ecoshock.org. Just look for our audio on demand menu and then choose alternative energy. You'll see a whole bunch of files on the tar sands there, including the rest of the speakers. One of them was Mike Mercurdy, a member of the Athabasca Chip First Nation, and also Jesse Kalman, the tar sands campaigner with the Polaris Institute, speaking on the social and environmental impacts of the tar sands. It's all there as free MP3 downloads at ecoshock.org. To stop the future destruction of the BC coast by tankers, which should never be there in the first place, be sure to check with notankers.ca. You can sign a petition and you can get active at notankers.ca. That's it for Radio EcoShock this week, and thank you so much for listening. Here's a little clip from Eliza Gilkison.
Unsustainable.